101 is a slang term for the most basic knowledge in some subject.
101, like our podcast.
This is Venezuela 101.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Venezuela 101. I am Miguel Pizarro.
And I am Melanio Escobar.
In this podcast, we will interview different experts to discuss the main aspects of the political, economical, and social situation in Venezuela with intention of having a broader and deeper understanding of the crisis that our country is going through.
Before today's topic and our guest, we want to remind you that if this is your first time listening to this podcast, you can find our previous episodes and the trailer through this same platform, where you will learn the main subject we address in this podcast and what drives us to create and maintain this space.
As we announced through our social media, we have Sara Fernandez today as our guest, with whom we will talk about the differential impact of the complex humanitarian emergency on the Venezuelan women and girls.
Sara is a Venezuelan lawyer, consultant in international law and human rights. She's the advocacy coordinator of the NGO Center for Justice and Peace and a specialist in justice and gender issues. She has developed her career around the defense of human rights, women rights, as well as sexual and reproductive rights. Sara, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Miguel, and hello to everyone. I'm very pleased to share this space with you today to discuss the situation of women's rights in Venezuela.
In the last episodes, we were talking with different experts about the complex humanitarian emergency in Venezuela and all the different aspects, cause, and devastating consequences has brought to the Venezuelan people. Now, there are population groups that are more affected than others. Sara, why do we talk about the women being one of the most affected groups? What are the consequences that the Venezuelan women are experiencing today because of this emergency?
Yes, in fact, groups in vulnerable situation have been disproportionately impacted both by the humanitarian and the political crisis in Venezuela, but also by the complete absence of state policies and programs to guarantee and protect their fundamental rights. From CEPAS, we have specifically denounced during the last years that women are suffering a differential impact as a consequence of the crisis and that they have specific needs which are being disregarded by the state. I would like to mention today three different dimensions of this impact. The first one is the crisis of the health sector, which has created significant obstacles for women in the access to health and reproductive rights. The second one is regarding violence against women, because the collapse of the judiciary have had a great impact on women victims of violence for whom accessing justice is almost impossible today in the country. I would also mention the migration crisis, which has led more than 6 million Venezuelans to leave the country, because women are more vulnerable to suffer sexual violence during their migration journey, but also because sexual trafficking has become a huge issue in the country right now. This has been especially serious for indigenous victims in the context of mining exploitation. Venezuelan organizations have denounced that indigenous women are forced into prostitution and are victims of trafficking networks, but that it's really hard to get them to share their experience because they are afraid of the harm that they would suffer in this violent context.
Are there any figures or data that allow us to measure the magnitude of what are you describing?
Well, the first thing we have to say is that we don't have any official data regarding this subject. This is precisely one of the issues we have frequently denounced, the lack of official information and data, not only about the situation of violence against women in Venezuela, but on key matters that affect women and girls, such as femicide, nutrition, health, education, and of course, sexual and reproductive rights. Since 2016, in fact, there has not been access to official figures regarding the right of women to a life free from violence and discrimination and all the different forms of violence against women. So the information that we have currently is based on the hard work of civil society organizations, which continue to document the situation in the country. Regarding violence against women, to give an example, as part of the work of the Center for Justice and Peace, we have documented femicides which occurred in the country since 2020. In 2020, we documented 212 femicides. In 2021, we documented 290 femicides. And in this, well, this year so far, we documented the femicides which occurred from January to March, and that's 62 femicides so far. I think that's something of special concern. It's also the lack of information regarding the situation on south of Orinoco, where, as you may know, mining projects are being carried out with the presence of non-state actors and with complete absence from the state. As I mentioned before, human trafficking is affecting women and girls disproportionately, and the region of Arco Minero is especially of concern for this subject. In this region, some organizations have denounced that some women are sold from 10 to 13 grams of gold. The organization Mulier has also documented that at least 672 women and girls were victims of trafficking in 2019, and that in 2020, 517 Venezuelan women and girls were victims of trafficking. We also have other type of useful information, for example, how different forms of modern slavery are also affecting the LGBTQI community, especially linked to forced migration. According to the reports of Unión Afirmativa from 2017 and 2018, they documented cases of trans women rescued in European countries from human trafficking mafias and for the purpose of sexual exploitation. And we think this is a topic that we really need information about in order to make the diagnosis of what is really happening in the country. These different data that I'm mentioning today, of course, makes a huge difference to understand the situation of women in the country and is of great worry, but it is, of course, an underestimation of the real problem. And in order to really understand the situation at the moment and what is happening to women and girls, both in the country and also to those victims who have been forced to migrate, we need official information.
And Sara, regarding sexual and reproductive rights, in a country with like the most serious difficulties in access to public services, with high levels of misinformation, how do we talk about sexual and reproductive rights? How do we talk about sexual health, contraceptive methods, hygiene? How is that reality for the Venezuelan women?
I'm really happy that you brought this topic because it's something that is not sufficiently discussed. And the truth is that the current state of sexual and reproductive rights for women, including sexual health, but also contraceptive methods and menstrual hygiene, is really one of the main obstacles that Venezuelan women and girls have to endure today, and which really impacts their daily life. In fact, we denounced a couple of years ago with other organizations that the maternal mortality had raised from 0.50% in 2012 to 65.80% in 2016. Also, the deficiency in access to running water, which is something that affects the general population. Actually, more than 70% of the population is affected by this deficiency, but it worsens the conditions of menstrual poverty. And with the work that we have done with women and girls around the country, we have seen how this is something that really impacts them, because most of them do not have access to sanitary hygiene products. In fact, one in four women surveyed responded that they do not have ever, or that they only sometimes have sanitary hygiene products. So sometimes they won't go to school, they won't go to work because they won't have access to these products, and they're not able to, at least once a month, they're not able to continue with their normal daily activities because of this lag. I think that it's something important to remember is that women in Venezuela don't have access to safe abortions, which is a topic that is also not sufficiently discussed. Abortions are still considered a crime in the criminal code, among others, in cases of pregnancy caused by rape. And this impacts, of course, all women, but especially women in vulnerable communities who do not have the resources to afford other options for abortion and are therefore forced to have dangerous clandestine abortions if they take this decision to do so. I think we need to stop thinking that this is a matter that we should discuss after we come out of the humanitarian crisis, or that has less priority, because it's a problem that is affecting a lot of women and girls in the country. So we need to talk about also not only sexual and reproductive health and the need to have contraceptive methods, the need for a real sexual education, which is completely absent today from the public school system, but also about the fact that women today in Venezuela continue to be criminalized if they have the need to access safe abortion.
And in addition to this, there is the incapacity of the states in matters of justice. And I'm referring, for example, the cases of sexual and gender violence. We have seen how cases of feminicide have increased in Venezuela in recent years, and there seems to be no reparation for the victims. What can you tell us about this?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Actually, something that we learned from documenting and reporting cases of femicide since 2020 is that most victims, even if they were already in a previous cycle of violence, had not come to the judicial power to put a claim against the aggressor. And it's a big percentage. In some of the months, more than 90% of the victims had not made a previous claim about violence against the aggressor. And what this shows us is the image that this victim have about the judiciary, about the judicial power, because a lot of them have this fear that if they do make the claim, they will be put in a more vulnerable situation than they were before. Therefore, they decide not to do anything to this regard. And this is incredible if we think that in Venezuela, we have a really strong law. We have a law which sanctions violence against women and which criminalizes most forms of violence against women, and also creates a special jurisdiction for tribunals to be gender sensitive and to implement this law. However, the main problem here is the implementation, and it's something that we have previously said, is that yes, we have a strong law which in theory protects women from violence and guarantees their access to justice. But in practice, this law has been very poorly implemented. If we think, for example, about the creation of this special jurisdiction was created in 2007 with the first law that was specifically with the objective of sanctioning violence against women. But even to this date in 2022, the jurisdiction has not been completely created in the whole country. But we see also other problems. Due to the lack of training and education programs on gender issues, the fact that the judicial authorities re-victimize women and girls who have suffered violence with discrimination, with discriminatory comments, with the application of gender stereotypes, especially in the moment when they're going to put the claim, that is one of the most sensitive moments. And we see this repeatedly against many victims. We do think that a good step that was taken with the amends that were done to the law last December was including institutional violence in the new law. And we think this is important because this tells everyone that is related to the judiciary in these cases that if they make any act which re-victimizes women, then they will be punished for it. And I think this is a strong message. But of course, this needs to be implemented, because if it's just in the law, if it's just theory, it won't make absolutely any change. So we do think that this is the main problem. We need to have more programs that really prepare anyone who will be involved with victims of violence against women on gender issues, and who make them understand that gender stereotyping is not possible during the process and that they would be incurring in institutional violence if they do this. I also wanted to just comment that this challenge is especially worrying in the case of LGBTQI community because discrimination practices and unequal treatment during any process of violence is the main practice. So we have seen cases of discrimination and unequal treatment against individuals who identify as LGBTQI. And we think they're constant and widespread. And this is something also that needs to be considered.
Sara, there is a large number of experts, activists, and organizations that, like you, have dedicated themselves to making this situation visible, to support the Venezuelan women, to demand better conditions and justice. And I believe it's a fair question to do. Has any progress been made? What remains to be done? How can this issue also become a priority for Venezuelan society? And most important, how can this be a priority in the international community?
Well, I would start with the Venezuelan organizations and in general, the Venezuelan society. I think that an important point that we have to make is that we need to make the situation of women and girls a priority. And I think there's this danger when we are in front of a multidimensional and complex humanitarian and political crisis like the one Venezuela is experiencing, to think that we need to first solve the crisis and that then we can really focus on the situation of women and girls to make it better. And what we have been trying to say during these years is that we cannot solve the Venezuelan crisis without addressing the issues of women and girls, because they are a fundamental part of society. So if we do not make their situation a priority, if we do not seek on ways how to guarantee and protect their rights, there won't be a solution to the crisis. And the other thing is that we tend to think of women and girls during a crisis only as victims. And this is something we should completely avoid, because they do not only experience the issues of the crisis as victims, but they are also a fundamental part to find solutions to the crisis. So they should be involved in every process of negotiation, of trying to find political solutions to the crisis, but also we need to empower them so that they can have an active role in society. And if we understand them only as victims, we deny them this right to be a fundamental part of the solution to the crisis. So I would bring these two subjects to the table. Regarding the state, and I think this is something important that we should remember, that it's the Venezuelan state who is the responsible for guaranteeing protecting women's rights in the country, regardless of all the hard work that the organizations already do. But something that we have already also seeked is for the state to publish reliable and publicly accessible statistics about the situation of women, because we think this is crucial to realize the dimension of the problem and to design an adequate public policy to guarantee their right. And this is something that we will continue to ask for until we have such public information. Another important topic that I wanted to mention is the fact that during the last Universal Periodic Review of Venezuela in the Human Rights Council, we had 328 recommendations on 34 topics, but 42 recommendations were regarding women's rights. And this included a variety of dimensions, making up a national plan to address the topic of violence against women, also giving them access to sexual and reproductive rights, including women in the political solutions to the crisis. And I think that these recommendations really give us a guideline of what the Venezuelan state should be doing in this moment and is not doing to address the situation of women and girls in the country.
Thank you, Sara. I'm extremely grateful to have you here, because I also consider that it is necessary to make visible the reality that women in Venezuela are experiencing today. And it is also important to highlight the lack of information, official figures, which for me shows that it's not in the interest of the regime to take action to counteract this reality.
Yes, and I would just like to add that I think that it's extremely important to insist in the actions that you mentioned, Sarah, because I consider that in this issue is an issue that must be approached from different many angles in order to obtain real solutions. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank all the organizations that are actively participating and are fighting for conditions and real solutions to address this complex situation. And with this, we end today's episode. Thank you, Sara, for joining us and for giving us your time to explain and to raise awareness around this important issue that is affecting women and girls in such a particular way, but which has affected the whole Venezuelan population entirely.
Thank you, Miguel. The questions were really on point, and we really appreciate every space that we can have to address the situation of women and girls.
Thank you, Sara, for your words, your knowledge. We now say goodbye to everyone. This was Venezuela 101. This was a new episode of Venezuela 101. If you like this podcast, share it. Spread the word with your colleagues, family, and friends. Follow us on our social media at Miguel_Pizarro, at Melaniobar, and don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment. Please tune in again in 2 weeks with new guests on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor FM, and YouTube.